A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we have some Royals discussion for you this evening. If, for those of you who follow the team, obviously if you listen to this podcast, you follow the team, but who follow it really deeply, you probably know and probably heard that there was the Major League Baseball draft recently, and it's probably the least celebrated of all the four major sports drafts, with the possible exception of hockey, just because hockey is the least popular of four. But exactly. So, but because of that, not only do we have myself, Jeff Herr, and Michael Engel, as always, but we brought in a special guest, another BP Kansas City writer, Clint Scholes. He wrote a piece on the draft detailing the Royals draft picks and some different thoughts on them. And he has joined us today to verbalize those thoughts. Clint, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Great. Already two games in for the day, so I'm ready to go to the movies now.
There you go. Well, we appreciate you joining us. So we'll start with just kind of general thoughts on the draft. Well, actually, well, before we go from just an overall perspective, why don't you throw out some names that from the draft that you really – that kind of jumped out at you, that you thought were good picks that maybe Royals fans should start to get to know over the next couple of years?
Well, you know, obviously A.J. Puckett was their first pick, and it surprised some people. I don't think he was on, like – some radars of guys who follow the draft as far as Royals go internally, but he's a really nice pick. I mean, you're talking about a four-pitch pitcher, and I guess I should put in the caveat before we go into this. The Royals had very little room to go with this draft. I mean, they had the second lowest draft pool at $3.2 million. You stretch up the 10% allowance, and that takes them up to about $3.5 million. So they didn't have the chance to make a flashy draft, but I think they did well in that, you know, you get Puckett, who is a four-pitch pitcher. I talked to his pitching coach, Garza. They made some refinements at the Cape, and then they turned him on to him at the Pepperdine, and all the dude did was toss like 46 and two-thirds or 48 and two-thirds, I can't remember which, scoreless innings, over 57 innings of scoreless, unearned ball. I mean – that's impressive for any pitcher. It's the third longest streak in NCAA history. I mean, some guy back in the 40s or 50s has the longest, and then Todd Helton had like by an inning longer at Tennessee. So you got to – I don't care what level you're pitching, when you're doing that, you're impressing, and that was a good pick. And then my favorite pick is the very next round is Khalil Lee. I think it's a guy who is just undervalued due to size. I mean, he's 5'10", 180 pounds, and as you guys know, baseball is all measurables, and if you're not 6'2", and 220, then you're probably not going to fit the profile, but I think Lee's an undervalued guy who can really excel, and I like to comp him just because he's from that same area to Jackie Bradley Jr., and I think that's a great comp for the guy. If you look at where they were at this time at a certain age, Lee doesn't turn 20, or he doesn't turn 18 until later in this month. But the same time as when Bradley graduated to where Lee's at now, Lee's faster. He showed better tools and better hit tool, just and more arm strength even than Jackie Bradley, and we know what kind of gun he has. So I think there's a lot of upside in that pick, regardless of what people thought at the time of the Royals making it.
So you talked about the draft pool and some of those things that, you know, kind of limited them. And as the draft was going on, you know, some of the names that were picked were guys, you know, who they're trying to pick guys who are going to be available for at least near that slot amount. But does that hold them back in any way? Is there still talent at those levels? Are those guys that they got, you know, in the like rounds 5 through 10 and later on, are those guys that are still quality, or are they just more kind of bargain signings?
The one thing I do during this piece, and I put probably too much time into it, I mean, is that I talked to a lot of coaches. I think I talked to 20-plus coaches this year after the drafts. And the one thing that I got is that they got some solid role players that I think could develop into stuff. I mean, Travis Eckert, their 7th-round pick, I talked to their pitching coach. And the Tigers have a guy named Matt Boyd in their rotation currently that's having a pretty successful season. Well, he went to Oregon State too, just like Eckert. And the pitching coach actually liked Eckert's stuff better at this point in his development than Matt Boyd. So that gives you – and that's a guy you signed for $50,000. I mean, does he ever turn into that? And probably not. But, hey, you got a chance to get a 4 or 5 on the back end of your rotation for $50,000. And he's got some pitches. I mean, he threw nearly a perfect game against USC this year. He's had success. And so that's one guy. I think he got – they went back to an old formula, thing relief pitchers that I think prototype as relief pitchers in baseball. And they've had a lot of success. I mean, they've drafted Greg Holland with that formula. They took in Lewis Coleman, Kevin Chapman. He never made it for the Royals, but – He's made it up to the big leagues, and they kind of got away from that for a little while. But I think Lonnie did a good job this year. He added quite a few SEC arms towards the back end of the draft that have a shot to at least, you know, contribute maybe in the back end of the bullpen or in the back end of a rotation someday. And when you've got the little resources in the draft that they had, I think that's important to at least get guys that have shots to profile towards the back end.
So you mentioned a lot of SEC arms there, and Royals have had some pretty good success with SEC. I mean, Lewis Coleman went to LSU, and Hoche Ever went to Tennessee, right? And,
yeah, Hoche Ever went to Tennessee. I mean, Kevin Chapman.
Merrifield in South Carolina, right? He's not a pitcher, but.
Yeah, and Kevin Chapman went to Florida, and they used him as a trade asset. And that's what you want. You want guys that are going to develop, and maybe they don't make it with your team, but you can flip them for guys elsewhere.
And have you noticed a big – I don't follow as much from the transition to college to pros, but is there that big of a difference coming from like an SEC school versus some of the other, you know, smaller conferences?
I think it's probably overplayed a little bit. The SEC, obviously the competition's not is better. I mean, it's just better from day to day. Now they haven't had as much success this year in the College World Series and in the tournament. But I think day to day you're going to see better hitters, you're going to see better pitchers, and so that goes a long way. And the guys that they got are guys that are older, proven. That a lot of them are seniors, but they've proven that even with average stuff, they've been able to get out that kind of competition, and that's big. And when you're working, again, it goes down to they're working with so little resources at $3.5 million. I mean, that's what they've spent on – they spent double that on Bubba Starling. They spent at least that, I think, on Kyle Zimmer, or close to. So to have that limited resources on their whole draft, I think they got some guys that are intriguing at least.
I think at this point, most of these guys, or a lot of them, have signed already. Some of them have already been assigned to different levels in the lower minors and short season ball. But is there, like, who's the one player that probably won't sign who you'll look back and think, man, that's the one that got away? Is there a player like that in this draft from the Royals, or is it just pretty much the guys they sign are guys who are worthy, and the guys that they don't sign, well, you're not missing out that much?
No, there's a couple guys. I talked to one scout who saw Anthony Bender up to about 95, and there's reports that he's been up to 98. Big kid, Santa Rosa. He's been hurt the last couple years, so he only pitched 16 innings. But one scout told me that he wants 3rd-round money. So you're talking $300,000 to $500,000. Well, with so many guys signed, I don't think the Royals are going to be able to fit him into their pool. He was their 20th round pick, and he'll probably end up at Cal State Northridge. And maybe he develops into something that that was worthy of that type of money. The other guy that I really liked, and I talked to him a little bit on Twitter, was a kid who just had Tommy John surgery. He's a 31st round pick out of Hanahan High School, and I think that's in the Carolinas somewhere. But he's a kid, 6'5", 185 pounds. He really blossomed late in the season, was popping some 91s to 93s, real athletic kid. And he's just all development late, and so he's not going to sign. It doesn't sound like he's going to go to North Carolina State, who they've had some good success developing pitchers. So Malcolm Van Buren is that kid, and he might be one that we see in a couple years that says that, you know, got away. But you can't really fault him. He's having Tommy John surgery, so, and with little money, I'm sure he was going to take more than 30 first round money to get signed. So that might be a guy that pops up late. It's kind of interesting. There was two guys that went back to back in this draft. And I can't remember the kid's name. Zoik, I think, from Pittsburgh, and Will Craig from Wake Forest. They went back to back in this draft in the supplementary round that were former Royals picks from a couple years ago. So these guys, you know, they both didn't sign, and so hopefully they plug the guys that end up being real talented in this group.
So we'll kind of wind down here with this question, but you mentioned that the Royals had kind of gotten away from some different things in terms of drafting strategy, and they kind of got back to them a little bit with this draft. So if you can, I know it's kind of an abstract thing to try and compare year over year, but if you can, is there a comparison that you could make relative to previous Royals drafts, you know, from this regime or from the last 5 or 6 years? Is it better? Is it worse? Is it, you know, how does it kind of fit in that regard?
Well, I think there's no doubt that their success record and over the last 5 years has been kind of poor. I mean, I drew it out in an article previous to the draft. I mean, the depth in their system just isn't there. Now, is that because they're picking on the back half of many of those years as toward the front half? It very well could be, but they've missed on draft picks. I mean, you can't miss. It doesn't matter where you draft. You have to have guys coming through the system developing. So I think this draft, with the limited resources, the one thing that Lonnie's crew has done very well in his time as scouting director is popping some of these low-round college kids. Alec Mills was like a 21st round pick at Tennessee Martin. He's probably the number one or two pitching prospect in the system right now. The other one, Matt Strom, junior college kid, was a later round pick. He's right there with Mills as being the one or two best pitcher in the system. So those are, you're talking college guys, Cody Reed, who they traded, college guy, Sean Manaea, college guy. I think they need to get away from these prep pitchers because those have been killing them right now. Nolan Watson struggling at Lexington. Foster Griffin and Scott Blewett, I saw them last year. They were in the low 90s when I saw them, pretty much topping out at 90 during the games I saw. I know that Blewett's back up a little bit, but I've heard Foster's not. And then Ash Russell, I don't know what the story is with him. He's down in Arizona. He hasn't even popped with a full season team this year. So that's four prep pitchers in their last two drafts that aren't doing anything, and they're all first-round picks. So, or they drew first round money. I think they need to do what they did with this draft, stick with college arms. I mean, Brandon Finnegan's pitching in the major leagues. Sean Manaea, Cody Reed, both in the major leagues. They've got pitchers in the lower, in the back halves of other drafts that are succeeding in their system. So maybe this and seeing that success the past years will start to change their focus, and you're going to see a more college heavy pitching draft at least.
If, you know, there's a, he put thoughts on more of the more specific players in some of his, in his article. So if you're interested, go to bpkansascity.com and you can search on Clinton. It'll have all his articles. So you can have all the article he talked about pre-draft that went over to kind of the Royals hits and misses, if you will. So Clint's kind of our draft and minor league guru, so he's got a lot of good information on there. So we'll let you go, Clint, and then get to your movie. But thanks a lot for joining us. There's a lot of great info. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That was Clint Scholes again from Baseball Perspectives Kansas City. Go give check out a bunch of his stuff. It's great for prospect info and draft info. So With that, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back and talk about some current Royals happenings.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
I'm in Kansas City, and I heard this sound one more time that I hadn't heard only twice. Now, you know who this is? Bo Jackson swinging at that, and now I heard this sound. It was a thrill for me. I say, here it is again.
The Vault.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Thanks for sticking with us through the break. We had Clint Scholes come in to talk about the Royals draft and how they're hopefully getting back to some of the things that made them so successful the last few years in terms of developing players and getting those college arms and everything. And you know, we've kind of talked about this before when the draft was happening or about to happen, that we don't really follow it as much as we used to. And it's always kind of funny because I remember when we were doing this show and the Royals were bad, and it was like, man, do other teams that are good pay as much attention to the minor leagues? And I think our conclusion at the time was that they probably didn't, because they're paying attention to the major league team. Mm-hmm. And now that the Royals are good, we can officially say, no, they don't. Because, you know, people used to be talking about Eric Hosmer and Moustakas, and for years you heard about those guys. Yep. And now, you know, I mean, Clint mentioned some names that are, you know, talking about Matt Strom and Alec Mills and those names that are big names now in terms of the Royals prospects and everything. And, you know, most people hardly know, beyond Raul Mondesi and Kyle Zimmer, most people don't really know many of the Royals prospects. So, you know, I'm that's a good thing. I'm not, yeah. You know, it's not, but it it means my perception of the draft and what are good picks and everything is a little off from where it used to be back when I was writing on that kind of stuff for you at Kings of Kaufman, Mike. But great to have Clint. What I love about Clint is, you know, you can have, you know, other people will write about, you know, locally will write about maybe Royals draft or Royals prospects and stuff, and they'll kind of, it's more a distillation of different things they've read about these prospects, which is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's how I used to do it when I would write.
That's how I did it when I was writing stuff for Kings of Kaufman. But
yep.
Clint's, you know, in the weeds talking to these guys. He's talking to scouts. He's talking to people in the Royals organization. He's talking to people in other organizations. He's got agents that he talks to, different coaches from universities, different, you know, trainers and stuff all across the country. Clint's got a really good network of people that are really in touch with the prospect, both, you know, pre-draft prospects and major league prospects. So when he gives you some knowledge and talks about what he's heard from people, you know, that's where he's coming from, more so than kind of trying to disseminate different things that he's read on the internet. He's seeing these people in person, and he's talking to people around them that know in person. So that's one of the best things about Clint. So his, you know, his information is very well researched and very reliable.
Yep. So you should follow him at Clint Scholes, S-C-O-L-E-S, on Twitter. He's you know, always got a lot of good info. Watches a ton of baseball, probably more baseball than anybody I know. So,
most likely.
pretty, I mean, just all the time. And, you know, and he's also up there in, right by Omaha. So when College World Series comes around, I mean, that's ground zero. So he gets to see a lot of that stuff too. So, real glad he was able to join us.
Absolutely. So with that taken care of, we've got, so we can talk about what's going on with the Royals right now. And for once, a not all that exciting week one way or the other. You know, we've had this, I don't want to call it a streak, but a bunch of games that have consisted of streaks where the Royals won six in a row. They lost eight in a row, and they won eight of nine. But, you know, since we last recorded, the Royals, they lost today to the Mets, so they got swept in a two-game series in New York, which is unfortunate, but not the worst thing in the world, when especially when one of those games is against Noah Syndergaard, who's really solidifying himself as one of the best pitchers in baseball. Yep. But so, you know, with those two losses, and they've just kind of had a decent week, and they're right now they're sitting at 38-33, and they are two and a half games behind Cleveland before Cleveland plays tonight. That is, so, you know, roughly two games behind Cleveland. And Mike and I were talking, it seems like there's kind of, you can kind of start to see a little bit of separation between, talking Cleveland, Kansas City, and then Detroit and Chicago are going to kind of be battling it out. So I think most people assumed it would be Cleveland, Kansas City the rest of the way once those two both kind of solidified themselves. And then, you know, Detroit and Chicago are still threats, and they're still, you know, definitely worthy of concern. But it seems like unless, you know, those two might battle it out with each other more so than make a run. But who knows? You know, they can definitely, both teams are capable of making runs. So I guess we'll kind of see what happens there.
Yeah. But as long as the White Sox have Chris Sale, they've got a shot. If, you know, Rodon figures something out, you know, they started out so hot and they really have kind of faded back. They've made a lot of roster moves. Like they dropped Jimmy Rollins. They called up Tim Anderson. They signed Justin Morneau to a deal, and he's kind of rehabbing way back to get back to the majors, and a lot of movement from them. They designated Maletos for assignment, so he's gone too. So really a weird set of moves for them, but they've
random
faded.
Thought. Mm-hmm. When you talk about that, like, it almost feels like kind of like panic moves.
Yeah.
For them.
Oh, didn't even mention they traded for James Shields, who's been shelled.
He has not been good.
Oh, no.
It almost feels like
he's got to be injured.
There's something. He's not right. He's not right. I mean, it feels like 2012 or so Royals, you know, where they start out okay. And mm-hmm. then things start to fall apart. And 2012, they had that huge losing streak. But they were like – they looked okay the first two series, and they had that huge streak. And things were – and then they kind of panic, and they start making these moves and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. Just kind of a – when you throw out all the moves that they've made and everything, that's what it kind of feels like. Just panic moves of, we got to keep this going.
Yeah, we got to do something. We got to find something that'll work.
2009 Royals, you know, after that 18-11 start, and then they
so much pain. Yeah, so I think with Detroit, as long as they can hit, you know, and they can, you know, Kinsler's having a great year, Cabrera's doing well, it just seems like at any point they can get hot, but mm-hmm. the pitching's going to hold them down. You know, they're not, that's, you know, Verlander's been a lot better, but Zimmerman's been really good, but that's kind of about it. Anibal Sanchez has been bad, and the bullpen is the bullpen. So it's, you know, they're not that scary. It's just, that's how it is. And you know, you look at the Indians are playing really well. They are better on defense. They're hitting well. Mike Napoli's hitting like crazy. And that starting rotation is the best in the division. So, you know, that's kind of, the Royals are going to have to scrape it together and kind of get some improvement on the road and more consistency on offense and see if they can, you know, continue to challenge. I mean, they're only two games behind, but You know, it's definitely one of those things where if you look at Cleveland, they look pretty strong. You know,
they look pretty solid. They look this year like what people have said the last couple years they were going to be.
Right.
Before each year they seem to get ravaged by injuries. They've even had some injuries this year, losing Carlos Carrasco and Michael Brantley. Is they don't know when he's coming back, right? Or am I?
They tried to bring him back and then he went down again. So I'm not sure where he's at. And you know, when he does come back, is he going to be the same? You don't know. I mean, they're pretty thin. So if they have other injuries, that could be a problem. If Francisco Lindor goes down, that is gonna
big problem. That's like Eric Hosmer going down.
He's their best. I mean, he's by far their best player.
He's one of the best players in American League.
Yeah, he's a pest. It's like I don't want to face that guy for the next few years because they've got him for his entire kind of rookie availability. Yep. It's just like he's good. He's really good. So that's gonna be what it is for the next few years.
It's kind of interesting. You got the Cubs and the Rangers and the Giants and the Nationals. Those four teams all have 43 or more wins. And then you look and there's 15 teams that have between 34 and 40 wins in all of baseball. So, I mean, it's like, and I guess I don't know how this compares to previous years. And, last year, since the Royals were in that kind of upper echelon at this point, I guess maybe I didn't really pay too much attention. But, so you got your kind of class of baseball with those four teams right now. And you got a whole bunch of people or a whole bunch of teams kind of in that middling range there that all are enough in the race to have hope. So it's going to be a fun year. The Twins are objectively just an awful baseball team. Atlanta is just objectively awful. Cincinnati is not that great. But, most other teams it's going to be a fun year. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Speaking of which, with the Royals and how their rest of the season will play out, one of the things that people are hoping is, Alex Gordon coming back is going to be is going to help lift up this team and some of their offensive inconsistencies. And they said, Ned Yost said that Alex Gordon could be back as soon as this coming Saturday. So for those, just for frame of reference here, it's Wednesday, June 23rd when we're recording this, June 22nd, I'm sorry, we're recording this. So, that would be Saturday the 25th that Gordon could be back, which would be really impressive and really great. But, it's another one of those things where who knows how effective he's going to be or whatever. But regardless, when Gordon comes back and he's ready, he's going to be on the major league roster. So who do you think, Mike, is the best candidate to come down? You think it's going to be they're going to send one of the outfielders, or you think they want to carry that additional pitcher for a little while? How do you think they're going to massage the roster when he gets back?
Nice Dayton Moore terminology there. roster. I don't know. I mean, we've seen Brett Eibner play pretty well for the most part. He's made the plays on defense. You kind of see a little bit of, when a pitcher gets up against him and they can throw 98 past him and, breaking balls, they adjust to him and they start throwing him more breaking balls. And, he struck out quite a lot, but he's shown that he can hit the ball, hit it hard and get extra base hits. He took Justin Verlander the other way for his first major league home run about a week ago. So he's playing well. He's not like blowing it up kind of like, his first stint before he went on the DL. I think they could keep him up. Then you would end up with Gordon in left, Kane in center. You could swap out Orlando and Dyson and kind of rotate Eibner in right field. Probably they might stick with Orlando because he's hitting so well and he's hitting like 350 and it's the middle or late June. Like he doesn't have enough at bats to qualify for the batting title, but he's up there. He's got a lot of at bats, so we'll see how long that lasts. So then if they do that, you would have Eibner available maybe to rotate with that, and Dyson could go back to being more of the pinch runner, or they can just do some kind of weird amoeba thing with those three guys. I mean, I'm not sure what they do. They currently have Brian Flynn up. They have Peter Moylan up. Both of those guys could be optioned back to Omaha. Moylan has pitched pretty well for the most part. He had that really bad inning against Detroit last Thursday, same night that Ebner hit his home run. So I don't know if he's going to be the guy or not, because he also turned around in, you know, the next day, or I think it was Sunday actually, where he threw like 2.1 or 2.2 innings in relief and extra innings, and really gave the Royals a chance to, you know, hold the Tigers in place until they could make their comeback, or not their comeback, but, you know, get the walk-off win. So I don't know if that would be him. Flynn is kind of the extra guy. They've been kind of bouncing he and Scott Alexander up and down all year. So if they were going to do that with, you know, sending a pitcher down and keeping all those outfielders, that's probably the move. But, you know, if Orlando's playing well and Dyson is playing well and they want to have both of those guys around, then, you know, Ned Yost doesn't use his bench that much. So a guy like Ebner, who could probably benefit by playing every day, keeping that swing and keeping the timing and not being on a bench, you know, maybe they do send him down. So I could see either of those. I'm not sure what I'm leaning at right now, but it seems like those are the two moves that are available to him.
Yeah, and it, you know, based on their kind of recent history, they, especially Ned Yost, seems to love having just an army, if you will, in the bullpen ready to go at a moment's notice. So it almost seems like, I think if it's a 50-50, I think they would skew towards having more options in the bullpen, especially considering how their starting pitching woes have gone, especially on the road. But it does, it also kind of feels like it could be just one of those really fluid things where, you know, Ebner might get the positional player version of the Lewis Coleman treatment, where it's, right, you know, he's up for a couple weeks and they kind of rotate the outfield a little bit. And then, you know, there are a couple bad days in a row with starting pitching, and so they had to dip into the bullpen, and so they needed a guy for a few days. So they, you know, Peter Moylan goes down, but then he comes back up for, you know, 10 days, 15 days, and then Ebner gets sent down, and then they kind of switch spots. And I could definitely see that merry-go-round happening, you know, for a good portion of the rest of the season before they, as they kind of experiment. And then, you know, it seems like, I think once they get to August, they usually kind of, at least the last couple seasons, I think they've kind of tried to flip it on and say, okay, we need to get ready for playoffs. We need to determine what our roster is going to look like and who we're going to have and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I definitely think that's something that they could do as well. And, you know, it's something that they've been really good at, quite frankly, is being able to balance those types of things to where they can make the roster work for them and put themselves in a position to succeed.
Yeah, I think the point you made about the bullpen is pretty strong one, because they do seem to split it up as far as, like, if they have more arms back there, and even guys like Chien-Min Wong, who you didn't expect anything from, but he's performed. I mean, he hasn't been, you know, lights out, and he's had some walk problems and home run problems and stuff, but he's been a serviceable guy, and he's been all right in, you know, just about any situation. But they seem to split it up so that they have a team that pitches when they've got a big lead, or if they're behind by a lot, and those guys, just their job is to just soak up those innings so that then they can unleash the A team, you know, Davis, Herrera, Soria, Hochaver, so that those guys are more available for the games that they need to protect the lead, for those games that are close and late, and so that they don't have to use Kelvin Herrera to pitch, you know, one, to get five outs, say, in a game that they're down by four. You know, that's just not the best use of him. But they can use Moylan in that situation. And so if that means that one more arm up allows them to continue that kind of, I guess, shift, or you know, I guess it's like lines in hockey almost. You know, if they can do that, then that's to their benefit. And, you know, it puts their best pitchers in the higher leverage situations in the games that they're leading and that they want to lock down. So, yeah, that's probably the tiebreaker if it comes down to it. And it's not like if they send Eibner down, they can't bring him back up, you know, injury or within, you know, after 10 days, if he's down, they can do that. Or if they did need an outfielder sooner than that, Rafe Fuentes has shown that he can play at this level in, you know, spot duty. So that's another guy that if they, you know, let's say they send Eibner down, they decide, well, we do need an outfielder after all. Well, they can bring Fuentes up and then, you know, same kind of thing. So, you know, I think maybe sticking with the bigger bullpen, that might be the way that they're going to go. I think that point you made convinces me that that's probably the way they'll do it. They'll probably send Eibner down.
And the best thing about, you know, if there is a bright side to the injuries and the adversity they've had to deal with is now they've kind of revealed some depth that maybe they thought they had but didn't actually realize they had. So, you know, they've got to put it callously, I guess, some things to play with in terms of how they can try and work everything out for who gets playing time and who goes up and who goes down and everything. And it's nice to have those options as opposed to scrounging for do we have to bump somebody up from Double A who's not ready just because we literally have nobody or something. So yeah, it's nice to have those different options there.
Yeah, and they didn't always get the opportunity to try those out in, you know, real situations that, you know, they would want to look at. You know, even last September they were trying to get into the, you know, that best record in the league to get home field. So they may not have felt as comfortable trying Eibner, but at this point it was like, you know, Gordon goes down, Moustakas goes down, and Fonte was ineffective. You pretty much had to just try these guys out and see what they can do. And for the most part, they're showing, you know, Chesler Cuthbert looks like he can play at this level. He may not be a star, but he can be average. And maybe, you know, if he was a little more athletic, maybe a little above average. And he's only 23. Whit Merrifield is, you know, like we said last week, he's everybody's favorite player. I mean, he's doing everything that you would hope a guy would do with that opportunity. And Eibner's played well as well. So, you know, those are guys that, Cuthbert played a little bit last year, but the other two didn't. So you get a chance to see them. And now, yeah, it's like you said, they have these guys. They thought they could probably do something, but now they know to an extent, hey, if we need to put Eibner in there for extended time, there you go. And Merrifield's played well enough that they were able to get away from Omar Infante, who was really struggling. So it's you know, kind of a, I wouldn't say blessing in disguise for these guys getting hurt or being ineffective, but, you know, it's, if you're going to have those injuries happen to you, it's good to have players that are available who can jump in and keep it going. You know, you don't really miss a beat with those guys in there. And maybe they'll regress at some point, but, you know, they're holding their own at the big league level. And, you know, that's certainly better than bringing them up and, you know, they sink. So
exactly.
We've seen that.
And we've seen plenty of that. So now here's a question. We don't necessarily have to answer it now. We can kind of table it, but, with Merrifield and how he's shown that he can have some success, and we'll obviously know more by the end of the season. And I think he's allowed them to not feel like they have to rush Raul Mondesi up to the big leagues this year, which I think at the beginning of the season, I think that was what most people thought was going to happen. So with Merrifield being where he is, does that mean that, A, the Royals are in a better position now to trade Raul Mondesi if they really need to make a run at this thing a month from now when the trade deadline's getting really close? Or B, that they can either try and trade Alcides Escobar, knowing Mondesi can come up, and try and get something for him? Some thoughts there to ponder. We can table that for a later show as we get closer to the trade deadline, and then we can kind of assess a little bit more of how we think those possible things might play out.
Yeah, I can see, and let's see what the listeners think too. Does Merrifield allow the Royals to maybe explore trades to those guys? Would that be something you, listener, would entertain? Is that, and if so, would it be Mondesi, who probably has more trade value because of, youth and affordability, or Escobar, who has a track record and is solid defensively. Why don't you email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com?
Yes.
And we can discuss. And if we read your response on the podcast, we'll send you a gift certificate to Kelly's Westport. Because we want you to check out our pals over there and have a fun night on us if possible. So
we call that it's a win-win is what that is.
That is. You get to share your opinion and be on the world famous Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Yes.
Citation needed. And and you get to go to Kelly's Westport Inn, which is a great place to watch the Royals. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if knee-jerk reaction is that would make them maybe more likely to be able to trade Mondesi just because, he does, I would say he has more value. But,
right.
I also think that would be a deal that they would only make if they were in a similar type of position last year where they traded for Cueto and Zobrist because they were looking well beyond just the regular season, where this year it looks more like they're in a dogfight and they're going to be, it's going to go down to the end. And maybe, a player, I'm not sure who would be the best guy out there, but, if you had to trade Mondesi for a frontline pitcher, you'd want it to be somebody who would put you over the top for sure. And not one of those things where you end up only in the wild card and you lose it and you don't have your top prospect, or you just miss entirely. So I think they would be pretty cautious about that, but I think that's probably a guy that you would have to be willing to give up if the right player was available in return.
That's got to be the major risk at this point, is that you would give up a prospect like Mondesi for a possible rental, and you might even miss the playoffs. That'd be worst case.
That'd be really bad. And it's like in 2014, they didn't really make a big deal. I mean, they got Josh Willingham and they traded Jason Adam, who was, pretty good prospect coming up. But he's, had some injury stuff, so it hasn't really worked out well for the Twins. And Willingham retired right after. So, it wasn't that big of an impact move, except Willingham did have that pinch hit single in the wild card game. So that was pretty big.
There is that. There is that.
But yeah, last year, I mean, they pretty much emptied, they pretty much traded every lefty they had to get Cueto and Zobrist, and they got a world title from it. But they were also in that position where it was very clear that, the Tigers were something.
They were the best team in the American League when they made the trade.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were looking to cement that, and they were looking towards how they were going to line up in the playoffs. And it was a great deal. I would, I would not ask them to take it back ever. Though it was interesting over the weekend, the Reds started against the three guys against the Astros, all of whom they received from the Royals in that Cueto deal. So Finnegan, I think, started Friday. Reed was on Saturday, and John Lamb started on Sunday. So
there you go.
There you go. And every player drafted, or everybody that the Royals traded away last July, they've all pitched in the major leagues now. So,
there's that.
I would,
but none of them, but none of them have a world championship, and the Royals do.
It's true.
So, so I guess we can kind of leave on this, but something that's been picking up steam recently with the Royals, we talked about the streaks, 6-game win, 8-game lose, win 8 out of 9 after that. One of the things that's been looked at there, and we talked about a little bit last week, home versus road splits. We talked mostly about the pitching last week, but not from an offensive standpoint. So the Royals have the Royals have scored 47 more runs at home than they have on the road. So that's not a run differential, which could be attributed to pitching. That's just straight up scored more runs, and they played 4 fewer games at home. So again, we talked about it last week. It's something that locally has been picking up a lot of steam as, what's the deal here? What are the Royals' options here? What do they do? I mean, when you hear these kind of things, what we talked about last week, you hear that stat I just dropped. What are your thoughts on the Royals, home versus road?
It's weird because, I mean, their style should probably apply to about any situation. It's not like if you were to take the Yankees and put them in a big stadium with a realistic right field and not that short porch, they're probably going to, you know, the lefty home runs would decline if they had to play in, you know, a bigger park. And it's kind of same thing with, like, the Blue Jays, who, you know, just rely so much on home runs, or Baltimore, who hit so many home runs. You know, you put them at a bigger park and you probably see those decline. And, you know, so I think the Royals being pretty much the opposite, a big contact team, you know, you would think that that would travel, you know, that you just, you put the ball in play. I mean, that's the MO, that's what they do. And, you know, they just don't seem to execute as well. I don't know if it's a comfort thing or, you know, I don't know. I mean, we're still trying to figure that out. It's a pretty stark split, though. You know, a lot of guys are, you know, Sal Perez is like a over 1,000 OPS at home. And, you know, he's still okay on the road. It's just that they're so much better at home. And they're also, especially recently, so bad when they go on the road. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. You know, maybe it's just the environment. Maybe it's that batter's eye. Maybe they don't see the ball as well than they do at Kauffman, which they'd be familiar with. It's really strange. I mean, I haven't seen that sharp of a split for a Royals team in a while, really. You know, it's so skewed that it's just like it's night and day. Like, they can go score 16 runs one night and then, you know, come in and barely scrape and claw and get like four runs in Citi Field. It's just, it's bizarre. I'm not really sure what the heck is going on with it.
And it's so, if you just do the math on here and play this thing out, I mean, so last year the Royals, they won 51 games at home and 44 on the road, you know, a little bit of a gap there, but still pretty solid.
Nothing,
you know,
crazy.
Both, yeah, you know, winning record both at home on the road. And the year before they were actually better on the road. In 2013, they were 47 and 34 on the road, and then they were like 42 and 39 at home, I believe. So, you know, they actually were better on the road. Now, if you kind of play this out, the Royals right now are 13-25 on the road, which is just absurd. but what needs to happen? I mean, if they're better at home this year than they were on the road, say they win 55 games, you know, which is almost 10% increase year over year in home wins, and then say they're able to get, you know, 33 wins, which puts them at, what is that, 33-48 on the road, which is a bad road record.
Yeah.
But then right there, you're looking at, that's still 88 wins right there. And I think there's a really good chance that 88 wins takes the division this year. You know, so, I mean, it's just kind of, again, one of those perspective things where you say, as bad as the Royals have been, as bad as they've been on the road, as many of the pitching woes as they've had, there's still only a couple and a half games back, and they're still on track to possibly be in a position to really take this division. It's just, it's such a kind of a weird year. You know, it's almost like when St. Louis won the World Series in 2006, I mean, I think they won 84 games or something, and they won the division that year. At 83-78, the Houston Astros were second that year at 82-80, and that was back when there were six teams in the NL Central. But they had St. Louis was 83-78, Houston was 82-80, Cincinnati was 80-82, and the Brewers were 75-87. So, you know, there's four teams all within eight games of each other. And, you know, while eight games does seem like a lot, that probably means that throughout the season, you know, Milwaukee was still within that, you know, 4 or 5 game range for probably a large stretch of the season, which means they're still in it. And so that might just be kind of how it shakes out for the Central Division this year, where, it's a dogfight, and everyone's kind of, you know, the top three teams are within two or three games of each other. So it'll be it'll be kind of interesting. But the, you know, the Royals, if they can just play 500 on the road the rest of the way, and then even just do, you know, a percentage of what they're doing at home, then they'd be in good shape.
I hope so. I hope Alex Gordon helps that lineup kind of stabilize, gives him opportunity to move Alcides Escobar down. Although as soon as people start talking about, hey, is Alcides Escobar, you know, does he need to move down? He starts hitting a little bit again. So it's just like every time we do that, you know, for us and other blogs and other sites, as soon as we start asking that question, he starts hitting again. So I just don't, it's like he knows. But long-term, overall, you can't expect Alcides Escobar to be much of an offensive contributor, and he really needs to be hitting ninth on this team. You know, it's just
it needs
like,
to be hitting 15th, but ninth.
Right,
is okay.
Right, but it's not a summer rec league baseball team in eighth grade, so we can't do that.
Yes, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, or just let him, you know, just skip him altogether. Something like
that'd
that.
That'd be nice.
So hopefully Gordon can allow them to do that, because Merrifield's doing pretty well at leadoff. And, you know, you look down the lineup, Morales has been hitting better. You know, a big two-game stretch really skews that, but he still did it. And he'd been looking a little better up to that point, too. So hopefully that ends up stabilizing it so that you can kind of get into that spot where you've got six guys, you know, your one through six are all guys who are pretty good at bats. And then you kind of hope that something breaks out at your seventh and eighth guys, you know, Cuthbert or Dyson or whomever you have down there, Orlando. And then you have Escobar there, ninth, hitting last, getting the fewest at bats instead of the most of anybody.
Yes, please. Please,
I mean,
please.
That's what it comes down to. It's like anytime you've got Escobar leading off or hitting second, you know, he's going to have more five plate appearance days than Eric Hosmer or Lorenzo Cain, just because, you know, if he's, you know, that's just how it works out. You know, it's like what,
that's just math,
16 or 20 more plate appearances per slot, over the course of, I don't remember what it is, but it works. It's significant. It's a good number of,
you're talking, that's, you know, four or five games worth of at-bats over somebody else. So it's almost like you're playing, in terms of at-bats, like you're playing more games.
Yeah. And if you're a guy like Escobar who makes an out 72-73% of the time, that is not what you want. So
yeah, he's not a guy that holds up well to exposure. He needs to be hidden as much as possible from an offensive standpoint. And when you hit him first, you're exposing him as much as possible, which is no good.
So hopefully Gordon can be the number two hitter, or maybe he's down in the lineup as a run producer type and they can shift other people up. Maybe they shuffle it around. I mean, we'll see. It's if he comes back on Saturday, there's going to be against Houston, and Dallas Keuchel will have already pitched, so he doesn't have to face a really tough lefty. He can just kind of slot in
you know,
see how he does.
Leadoff seems like it would be the best option for Gordon coming back, because, you know, even if his timing is back and he's ready to hit and he's, you know, better than he was before he got injured, because he was still struggling, even if that, you know, the power is still going to take a little bit to come back, as we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. So
a hand injury, yeah.
Exactly. So he, you know, being in that leadoff role where you don't need to, you don't have to worry about power as much, and you can just kind of let it rip and just try and get on base, which is what Gordon's good at, then that seems like that'd be the perfect way to kind of ease him back into the lineup. And then you can put Merrifield in the two spot, which he's shown he's been able to handle. You got Hosmer at the Cain at the three, Hosmer four, Salvi five, Morales six, on down the line. And, you know, I like that a lot. And then you end up with Escobar in the nine spot. And we've talked before, as streaky as a hitter as Escobar can be, and with his, you know, it's decreasing, but his historically good ability to make contact, that's, you know, that's a good a solid nine hitter because he's a guy that can put you in a lot of situations where you have a guy on base, and he's, you know, he's a decent base runner and got some speed on there. So, you know, it's almost, if you think of Alcides Escobar as a leadoff hitter, that's almost like having two leadoff hitters then if you lead off with him and at the nine spot. So
that's, you know, that's some spin.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's, I'm trying to convince the Royals more than I'm trying to convince myself or anybody else. But, you know,
yeah,
if you're listening, Royals, that's how you do it.
Yep. I would say if he's hitting ninth, nobody will. I mean, people will complain. That's what people do. But
right,
there won't be as many complaints. You know, just bat him ninth. That's all people are asking for. They're not asking to cut him. You know, they're just asking to bat him ninth.
Yeah, I mean,
easy.
Needs to be commensurate with his skill. And his skill right now is that of a number nine hitter or worse. Right. But to leave on a happier note, it seems as though Kendrys Morales might be kind of coming out of his little. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but you liking what you're seeing from Morales the last week or so? Or are you thinking maybe he's digging his way out of the hole, or do you think maybe it's just a blip and he's going to have just a bad season?
I think he's probably coming out of it. He's been able to go the other way better, which I think just means he's seeing the ball better. And a lot of the time, I mean, he was on base like 11 times in a couple of games. And a lot of those were walks, you know. And I think once you see a player walking, they're recognizing what pitches they can do something with and which ones they can't. And they lay off the bad ones and they hit the good ones hard. And that's what he did in that Detroit series. And he put a charge into one in as a pinch hitter last night, but just short of the fence. But it looked good. So I think he's coming around to it. It's to the point now that, you know, if he doesn't, he's got maybe a month left. So, I mean, it's not one way or another. It's a problem that will probably solve itself. He'll either be hitting or he'll, you know, be gone or on the DL, quote unquote, wink, nudge, whatever.
Right.
You know, or, you know, maybe
coming
outright
down with a case of suckitis.
Right. You know, whatever it is. But I think he's probably getting a little better from it. If not, I mean, we'll see. He'll be gone. But if he's effective, if he's, you know, close to what he was last year, you know, a lot of those offensive problems will start working themselves out just because that's a guy in the middle of the lineup that you can get him to drive in. And he's driving in runs. You know, it's not like he's not. It's just that his batting average is poor and he does hit into double plays and he struck out on some bad pitches in some big spots. And so, you know, the angst is there and it's earned. You know, he hasn't performed well, but at the same time, it's like he's hitting better. He looks better. You know, it's not just like he had one big game and it bumped up his numbers. He also, the way he had that big game was important. So I think
it passes the eye test.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I think he's probably going to be okay. And, you know, like I said, if he's not, well,
is what it is.
There you go. So,
with that, we'll leave you. That'll be it for the show. Thanks again to Clint Scholes for joining us on the show tonight. Always great to have an expert of his caliber come in and kind of give all the listeners the lowdown. So if you like what you heard and you want to read more of his stuff, definitely go to bpkansascity.com and read all of Clint. He always has his Diamonds in the Rough article talking about all the happenings at the lower levels. So it's a good way to keep up on the farm system if you're like Mike and myself, where you've fallen out of touch with it since the Royals have been good. It's usually just a quick read. It's not like it's thousands of words, and it just gives you an idea of what's happening at the lower levels. So definitely read Clint's stuff on BP Kansas City. Visit BP Kansas City in general, because Clint's not the only great writer on there. We got a lot of them. Putting out a lot of good stuff right now all over the place. And if you're interested in the type of analysis you get on this show, there's more and probably better of it from the writers on there. So, cause they're very talented people. So I'm not ashamed to say that, cause I know we, we do as well as we can on the show. But so yeah, with that, we'll leave you on this evening or afternoon or whenever you're listening. If you have any answers to the question we posed a little bit earlier, then go ahead and shoot us an email or hit us up on Twitter or whatever. And if we read your response, we'll shoot you some gift cards to Kelly's, and you can go have some beers on the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and everything will be right in the world.
Right. And if you have weird questions, you know, just weird baseball questions or general baseball questions or whatever, I mean, shoot them our way. I mean, you have a say. You can ask us something that you are interested about, and we can at least BS about it.
Absolutely.
Or we can bring, you know, a well-researched and informed opinion too, or, you know, it just depends on the tone of your question and everything else. You know, we want to hear from you. And
right.
We're also we're recording this, like we've said, June 22nd, but on June 30th, we're going to try to get some people out to Kelly's Westport Inn and watch the Royals take on the Cardinals. They'll be in St. Louis, so not trying to pull anybody from a game at Kauffman Stadium. We're going to try to gather some folks, watch the Royals in St. Louis while they are in St. Louis, not while we're in St. Louis, because why would you want to go to St. Louis?
Right. Man, I missed a golden opportunity for a segue when we talked about the Cardinals earlier to talk about that.
Shame. That's okay. That's okay. We're not professionals, so it's okay. But yeah, we're gonna try to get as many people out there as we can, and you know, try to meet some new folks. You can make new friends or catch up with old ones, and everybody will probably be on Twitter at the same time, so you can point to your phone and show the tweet that you just fired off that everybody also saw on their timeline. And good way to you know, run into some interesting people and some nice folks from Royals Twitter and from Kelly's. They're big fans of the Royals out there too. So it's June 30th, and it's the next day is a Friday just before 4th of July weekend. So, you know, you're probably not working that day anyway. So come on out.
Get on out, watch some Royals, hang with us.
Yep. Should be fun.
Done and done. So hope to see you out there for that. Thanks again so much for listening. Couldn't do it without you guys. So that's our show. And we hope you'll come back next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.